T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Our final hour includes the What If Wednesday. Joe Staley will join us before it's all said and done this hour. We're good to have you here on 95.7 The Game. 888-957-9570 is the number. Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky. Hello to Mike in Vallejo. Mike, you're on 95.7 The Game. What's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. Thank you.
So I had a comment about the tattoo. I'm like you guys. I'm calling BS. I'm Mexican. A lot of the guys I grew up with during junior high school, if they had an X4, an X3, the three dots, the four dots, you knew what that meant. And if you got it, it's because you're gang affiliated. I'm not from New York. I've never been to New York, so I don't know what it's like up there. But if you're saying that that's the way it is, then that's because that's how he grew up, and he didn't really care who he was offending. Just like these guys didn't care to show off what they were down for, what color they were, you know, claiming or whatever, what gang. So, yeah, this guy knew what he was doing. Yeah, you can change and whatnot, but don't walk around and say, oh, I had no idea, because you knew what you were doing. I don't care how young you were at that point. You're old enough to know exactly what you're doing at that point. It's not like you're like 2 years old and they did it to you, with, you know, involuntarily or whatnot.
Right. No, Mike, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. And I'm all about giving a teenager all the room in the world he or she needs to grow. I was a teenager. I screwed up. I made mistakes. But none of my mistakes lean towards an element of bigotry that would be concerning later on in life. So, you know, he can claim total, you know, ignorance, but you'd have to be completely ignorant to buy it in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and I'm with you on learning. I certainly think I've learned and become more open-minded over the course of my life by far. And if there was recorded tape of every word I'd said in my life, frankly, if, you know, I was a younger kid in the Instagram generation and there was videotape of everything I said in middle school and high school, I'm sure there'd be things I'd have to apologize for now, because I've learned and I've changed and I've grown. But again, and I think Ray and I have both sort of harped on this since Mina said it. Saying you're sorry because the Patriots told you you better say you're sorry before you come to training camp and get that tattoo removed, that doesn't do me or anyone any good, really. The way to convince us that you're sorry is to explain yourself. And, you know, lying, which I believe he's done, and I certainly think is the common opinion on the way he's handled this, or even just not going into any detail. Like, offer, if you've really changed, offer up some details, because I'd love to hear about it. Because, yes, change is good, especially when it comes in a positive, open-minded direction.
And I guess my question would be, if we didn't have you in a short sleeve T-shirt and you had been sleeved and we still didn't know about it, would you be getting it removed?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if you didn't get called out on it, how would you be feeling about it? Or did you need to be called out on it to even know what it was in the first place, which I guess is the argument he's trying to make that we're not buying. Coach Pleasant Hill, you're on 95.7 The Game, Coach.
Hey, fellas. As I like to say, nice to talk to the three smartest guys on radio. But my wife, I'm born and raised in California, Bay Area. And my wife's from southern Vermont, which butts right up against New York. And I just want to say that I'm familiar and I'm endorsing what Damon has said, is that it's a different world. People think of New York from the West Coast. They think of New York City. Now, New York is a whole different genre, a whole different category. And I'll never forget. Can I tell a quick story? We have time.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I was there one of the first times, about 25 years ago, and we're at a pub and we're talking to people, and we travel a little bit. And people, when they hear from California, they usually ask me one or two questions. Do you surf? And do you see celebrities? Okay, I'm prepared for that. But I'm just at this pub and with my wife and her friends and all this from all the locals in Vermont. And this guy turns to me and he says, so from California, huh? And I said, yeah. And he goes, you guys got a lot of blacks out there? And I was stunned. I was thinking surfer celebrity, but that was the mindset. It was like an alien thought to them that, anyway, supporting the concept that what Damon was saying is they just, it blew me away.
Look, I thank you very much. Look, I don't want to paint my hometown as like one of the more racist places I grew up in, but let me so Schenectady is the first tank of gas away from New York City, which is why it's a drug hub. There is a massive drug hub in Schenectady, New York, called Hamilton Hill. You can Google this. Like, it's Hamilton Hill makes the worst neighborhood in Harlem look like Beverly Hills. And it is just, it's a level of crime. It's a level of police corruption. The movie Beyond the Pines was all about police corruption in Schenectady. And there was, I mean, you wouldn't believe what goes on in these sleepy little towns in upstate New York. And beyond that, when I went back and I worked for ESPN, having lived in California for years, I'm going to tell you right now, the most racist place I've ever lived in my life is in Connecticut. Open, overt racism, comfortable with it, was in Connecticut. There's something about a level of comfort that people feel behind their, you know, gated communities that allow them to just start flapping their. It stunned me when I was going through it, and I'm a hard guy to stun.
But every state's got that. California, you know, for everybody who asks the question about surfers, celebrities, and black dudes, there's several other Californias there. There, just like there are several different New Yorks and several different Ohios. I mean, just
I spent almost a year living in Bakersfield, and I can tell you, it is not the same as the Bay Area. It's a different world entirely.
And the only point I'm trying to make is that, you know, a lot of people's attitudes are shaped not just by who they grew up with and where they grew up, but the circumstances under which they grew up. And it's not that California is more enlightened necessarily, but it's that there are different pockets of enlightenment everywhere. There are places in Miami that are incredibly enlightened, but we talk about Florida as though it's one monolithic, cow college. That's not the reality of America. America is not defined by the borders of its states. It's defined by different populations in different parts of the country. And until we get around that, we're not going to figure out how to talk to each other.
Rolando in Mountain View, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, guys, I'm a big fan of you guys. A big fan of Damon and Rado. You guys do awesome work. After a long day of work, I love listening to you guys. So keep up the good work, man. I love listening to you guys. So
great job, fellas.
Awesome job. I was watching the NFL draft over the weekend. I don't know if you guys talked about this, but they did a thing about Alex Smith and his recovery and his injury. And I was born in 82, and I haven't seen the highlights of the Heisman, but after seeing what Alex Smith went through, and I don't know how TMZ does, I don't know if you guys heard about this, but TMZ actually released photos of what his leg looked like after, And I didn't know how extensively bad it was. That I don't know if you guys know, he had 17 surgeries on that leg. And, like, more power to the guy, man. I'm really rooting for him. And I saw a picture of his leg, man. And I seen, like, if you see what I saw in that picture, it's like watching, like, The Walking Dead. I mean, that leg should not be. I'm just amazed by a guy and his toughness. Because
it looked like his leg got stuck in a wood chipper, as deformed an extremity as you could look for. It's amazing that surgeons were able to save it. It really was.
Yeah, we talked about it yesterday. And E60 is going to do a special
Project 11. It's called Project 11.
And it shows how good our medicine can be when we apply the full effort to it, because it was a heroic effort to save the leg, let alone make it functional. But it's still a reminder of how hard it is for everybody to get an acceptable level of care. And that's what we're looking at with the virus. I mean, there are different levels of care for different people, and that shouldn't be in a country this well off.
I think, an incredible reminder of the danger of football. I mean, that gruesome leg really could happen to almost any player on almost any play. And exactly. Thank God it doesn't happen more often, largely because these guys are incredible athletes that have learned how to protect themselves to some degree. But that's not all the risk, but that's certainly one of the horrifying risks of playing NFL football. And, man, it takes a certain level of toughness to engage in that at any level. And certainly the level of toughness that Alex Smith has shown through his whole career is remarkable.
I can't believe that we don't have as many broken limbs as we do spectacular plays after every Yep. weekend of football. It really is a testament to the rough, tough nature of the football player's body that they can go through. I mean, just extended arms looking for loose balls, not being snapped by diving helmets and shoulder pads, much less guys at your shins, your ankles, your knees at all times. It really is amazing that every game doesn't feature several stretchers running out to the field to remove a player from the play. It's amazing.
And
why we keep on coming back. I mean, it's the gladiatorial nature of the sport that has a huge appeal to it. And I've always said that, you know, removing violence from football is like removing gravity from skydiving. You can't do it.
And we've desensitized ourselves to this because, you know, we watch games and this happens 6-7 times a game. Somebody's getting carried off or walked off for one reason or another. It's what we've decided to accept about this sport. And if there were more catastrophic injuries like that, I wonder if we'd feel the same. And it's not so much the outlier injuries that people sort of remember, like the Ryan Shazier injury. It's just the steady stream of it that I think, you know, allows people to sort of compartmentalize, you know, sort of, you know, physical disasters like Alex Smith's. So you're just going, well, we've seen a bunch of those already. And I think that's the thing that the Alex Smith injury should remind us of. It's just, this is seriously dangerous stuff that we ask people to do for our entertainment. And if you're going to keep asking, at some point, you've got to accept that this is a horrifying spectacle that we engage in 17 times, well, 21 weeks a year. I mean, there's no getting around that.
I mean, I don't know about horrifying, but dangerous. It's a dangerous game. By being played by men who are willing to accept a level of danger to go out there and play it. I mean, it's not horrifying to me. You could see a gruesome injury. That's rough, but I mean, my gosh, the worst injuries I've ever seen are on basketball courts. Bar none.
Yeah.
Bar
yeah,
none. I mean, oh, my God.
Although I will say, you know, I think describing an Alex Smith-level injury as horrifying is about right to me.
Yes. Oh, the yes.
I think in general, we do. You're right that we compartmentalize and have become sort of inured to guys sustaining injuries ranging from, you know, twisted ankle to torn ACL, and that we're sort of just okay with that. That is true, but I think fundamentally we imagine, like, you know, those guys are pretty much okay in the long run, and they're compensated fairly well to take that risk. But it's when the injuries reach this whole other life-defining level that I think it starts to become uncomfortable.
Bill Barnwell
Go ahead.
Well, I'm changing subject, so go ahead.
Okay, fine. No, it's fine. Go ahead. Enjoy.
Oh, okay. What if I told you it's time for What If Wednesday? Screw Bill Barnwell and the players cut from each team. We'll get to that in a minute.
What if I told you hindsight is always 20/20?
The Minnesota Timberwolves select Stephen Curry.
That everything happens for a reason.
With the first selection in the 2005 NFL draft, the San Francisco 49ers select Aaron Rodgers, quarterback to California.
What if I told you it's time for What If Wednesday on Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky.
Oh, I'd be interested in that. What if I told you that Bill Barnwell did have a really good piece about the NFL team most likely free agent casualty, the player that they're about to cut, and who might be able to pick up and help out who? And I was going to tell you, I don't like one of these players for the Niners, not really any of them. So let's just get to What If Wednesday. What if I told you this was a better segment? I believe it is. Lucas, what do you got for us today, man?
Guys, what if the timeline of this pandemic, the coronavirus pandemic, shifted back 6 weeks from where it is right now, and the outbreak hit before the Super Bowl? Rudy Gobert, that whole incident happened, say, the Wednesday before everything was supposed to kick off down in Miami. How do you think Roger Goodell and the NFL would have dealt with all this happening before the biggest day, biggest weekend on the sports calendar?
Wow. That's a big question.
They'd have played the game.
Yeah,
if it was that week, they'd have played the game.
They play the game.
If it was 2 weeks ago, if it was 2 weeks before, they'd have played the game. They would not have canceled that. That's a place that the NFL can't, I think, mentally go.
Track this scenario with me, Ray. Hold on. Track this scenario. Let's say that actually the Wednesday that Gobert happens is the Wednesday before the championship games. Gobert happens. Wednesday championship Wednesday Gobert happens. Sunday they play the championship games. By the Super Bowl, there's not yet an outbreak from those games, but there's at least some people who attended those games who have tested positive, and they're being panned widely for playing those games after Gobert. That, I think, is the scenario where they cancel the Super Bowl.
Maybe.
I don't think that. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I think the NFL would figure out a way to rationalize publicly the idea that the game must go on for the good of America. And then they'd worry about the fallout later, because at their essence, they believe they are bulletproof. And they have not really sort of dealt with something that would turn the majority of football fans off. And I think they would operate on the theory that until we get told this is a bad idea, we're going to do it anyway.
Where was the Super Bowl this year?
Miami.
Yeah, they're playing. Miami. Uh-huh. Florida's 100% playing. They're definitely playing the game. I think that the only thing that would be the direct effect of this, other than maybe creating a easily identifiable game zero for football to have, is that scalper prices would have been gouged in the last minute. You'd have had less interest in going, less interest in plunking down, and it wouldn't have completely nullified the interest, but there would have been less interest for scalpers on the resale market. I do think the game goes on. Commercials are played. We see J-Lo and Shakira shaking their rear ends no matter what. That's what I think. It's sick, but that's, yeah. Yeah, I could see how football would just apologize for getting people sick after the fact before they'd cancel a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I cannot envision that the biggest weekend of the sporting year would be sort of dismissed in the name of safety. I just don't believe they would do that.
I will say this, though. Like, I never thought that they were actually going to cancel an NCAA tournament, and they did that. So who knows? I mean, we live in a new world now. Who knows? That was a good question, though. That was a big one, Lucas.
I mean, there's a certain point in this process where they would have had to cancel it, right? I mean, like,
you think
they're canceling some things. Teams aren't allowed in their facilities right now. Oh, hi, Ray. I don't know exactly where that line is. I don't know if it would have had to be the Rudy Gobert thing at the end of the regular season to get the Super Bowl canceled, but that line is somewhere.
I'm glad we didn't find it. It would have been fascinating. I'm glad we didn't go through it. I'm glad we didn't. It's a level of sports anxiety America did not need. No doubt about that. Lucas, next question. What do you got?
Well, boys, many believe that Aaron Gordon was robbed of his second dunk contest title in a row. This year, it was due to Dwayne Wade. This happened, of course, back in February during All-Star Weekend. Gordon's final dunk earned a score of 9 out of 10, thanks to Dwayne Wade. And that handed the title to his fellow Miami Heat former teammate, Derrick Jones Jr. How did Aaron Gordon deal with this? Apparently, he's very frustrated, and he dropped a diss track aimed at Dwayne Wade. This dropped a couple days ago. It is titled 9 out of 10. Before I ask if you have heard it, actually, let's just do that. Have you guys heard it?
No.
Outstanding.
No.
We have about.
I have heard it.
It's actually pretty good.
I would not use those words exactly.
I enjoyed it. Well, at least maybe this cut I enjoyed. So here's a couple seconds of it. Take a listen.
Knew one day I'd be good and you'd come for me. Didn't know it would make me this hungry. Looking at your judgment and everyone's wondering. Brought the heat to Windy City, did you see the damn coat? Saw you in the hallway, you say young and put on a show. Didn't know that's the cold, but you're about to get rolled. Even Adam Silver told me I deserve the gold. Didn't get the trophy, but I got something to hold. Jeez, man. Forgive me, bro, I won't sell my soul. Big chillin', paint me as a villain. I jumped over the biggest dude in the building. God willing, the best and then I still am. Your judgment gives me no fulfillment.
Awful or not awful?
Okay, name checking Adam Silver worked for me, and jumping
it's not
over,
awful.
Jumping over biggest dude in the building was a good line.
Yeah. No, it's funny. Like, Aaron Gordon is not a bad rapper, and this is a funny diss track, and it's not really a diss track, although he takes a couple shots at Dwayne Wade. I think one of the funniest parts is somebody outed that they had a whole plan to make sure it ended in a tie, and Wade went off script.
Yeah, he did. He did that for his ex-teammate. Which
yeah.
is kind of a cool thing for Wade to
yeah.
do for an ex-teammate at the same time. I know why Gordon's ripped. I know why Wade did it. I think it's great. This is why the NBA is the league that creates content and makes shows easy to do. Whether you
question?
Like that song or not.
I didn't get to my question yet. Thank you so
much
for asking.
Oh, sorry. Well, what's Ray's feedback on the song?
Yeah, let us know, Ray. What do you think?
Whining about a dunk contest makes you less of a human being, period.
Yeah, I figured we'd get something like that.
Well, why wouldn't you? I mean,
no,
seriously.
I agree. Okay.
Yeah, with a million things going on, even before the virus happened.
Well, I think this was just something
to
do.
You were wronged based on that.
You know the line from Q-Tip, Joni Mitchell never lied.
Yes.
But Dominique Wilkins never cried. All right, so what's your question?
Gary Patterson, head football coach at TCU, also taking this time in the quarantine. Apparently, he's going to make a whole album. Don't have any samples there to get you guys.
Wait, I'm sorry. Who?
Head
the TCU coach.
Head
Gary
football
Patterson.
Coach at TCU
is making an entire album.
Yeah.
Of diss tracks.
I don't know if it's diss tracks, but he's taking the time to become, I guess, more musically inclined.
Is it a hip hop album?
Don't know.
Okay.
Oh yes,
it'll be smooth contemporary jazz.
I can
exactly,
hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a soprano. He's a soprano saxophonist of frozen water.
I can't wait.
This is a not the easiest question to answer, but I'm just going to ask it anyways. We're up against the break. If you don't want to answer, just throw it to break. What if you had to make a diss track aimed at someone in sports? Who would it be? Ooh. Who would it be aimed at? And how would it go? Do you think you could actually do this well enough to make it palatable?
Yeah, mine would be at Gary Radnich. It would be called Shrunk in the Spotlight.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. God, I have so many diss tracks I would like to cut, but the person...
Think of your diss tracks, I tell you what, we'll have...
The person that jumped to mind is Rip Hamilton, and absolutely I could write some insulting raps about that mask-wearing doofus.
Rip Hamilton? Who's got a problem against Rip Hamilton? You have money against UConn that night or something? I mean, Rip
I
Hamilton.
Hate the Pistons. I hate the Pistons. I hate the fact that he became a Bull, and I hate his game.
There it is.
I can't wait to hear.
Can't wait to hear about the song title, Ray Ratto's diss track. We've got Joe Staley, who is pretty much blushing because he's been getting the opposite of diss tracks. Like, everybody's calling up to talk about how much they love Joe Staley, which, of course, made a tackle a little uncomfortable. That is next here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, diss tracks. Targets will be announced. Stay tuned. Much more coming up here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Rip track.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Joe Staley is joining us here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. We are thrilled to have him on with us in the week that he announced his retirement. Joe, first of all, a career well played, every dollar well earned. A tip of the cap to you in the way you conducted business throughout the entirety of your career. I remember when you were drafted. And you were fantastic every day afterwards. Congratulations to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. It's been a kind of a whirlwind since that announcement on Saturday. So, a little bit overwhelming and everything. But it's been really nice to hear. And a lot of people that have, I've had a chance to work with over the years. And it's been a cool 4 or 5 days.
It's got to be amazing to kind of hear your own eulogy, right? Like, all these people are talking about the guy who was such a great captain, such a great leader. It's got to be humbling to hear it, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was telling my wife, Carrie, I was like, it's almost overwhelming to hear everything. And because I think people and human nature, too, you don't really get an opportunity to kind of share, your feelings about someone and how much you appreciate them and, whatever. And, maybe you're not even aware, kind of impact that you're having on people. And then for all that to kind of just come out and be told to you in one weekend was a little bit overwhelming. And, for sure, appreciated a ton. I felt very loved. But it was a bittersweet because obviously like what I said in my statement, it was a really hard decision. I still love the game of football a ton and wasn't really expecting this to go down. And but it was a decision I had to make and had to come to.
Rehashing this as many times as you have in the last 4 days, has that made the start of your transition better or worse? Because there's always the part that you're going to miss, and having to talk about it over and over again could either be therapeutic or it could be kind of a drag.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that question because I haven't really thought about that. But now that you mention it, I think it has been a little bit therapeutic because, I think it's been, like I said, it was a hard decision, but it was the right decision for what I needed to do with my life and, my future and stuff. And, just realizing that, I left my mark a little bit in the game of football and everything that I've, poured my whole entire, every moment of my life for the last, 15, 16 years going back to college. I felt like I accomplished something and definitely some, impacted some players and, coaches and in a positive manner. So, I definitely hold my head high and, I think it's been really cool to kind of, reconnect with a lot of players and people that I've come in contact with throughout the years and worked with. And, talk about old memories and it's fun going down that road. So I think it's been good. It's helped the transition a little bit. But I think the thing that would be really hard, this I'm kind of anticipating is like once it gets down to, because really, I mean, since I was, probably 9 years old, it's just you get to that August, September time and it's time to play football. And it's just what I've known. And so, it'll be really a change to be on the opposite side and just be watching as a fan and not having to prepare myself for the upcoming season.
You talked about affecting other players, and I think anyone who tracked the sort of video call you guys did yesterday, saw that on the faces of some of those players, McGlinchey and Kittle, and I know Justin Smith called you the perfect leader. And I'm curious whether that comes from a specific leadership philosophy. Do you feel like that's just, it was just naturally who you were, or is that something you specifically developed and tried to be a mentor to other players?
Yeah, early on, I mean, I definitely did not, never looked at myself as a leader. You know, it wasn't a role that I really even welcomed, because I was always looked at a leader as someone that was, you know, given the speeches. And, you know, you kind of have an idea coming, you know, out of college especially, is that, you know, the leader of the team is the guy that gives speeches and does the rah-rah stuff. And that was just never me. I was never a guy that was going to get up in front of the team and talk about what we needed to do. But what I could do and I could control was just the way that I worked and the way that I approached every day, meeting room and the weight room, and, you know, just the effort that you give to what we're doing. And so I think I just kind of developed maybe that style of leadership was kind of like my own, of just being the guy that would work. And I would kind of show you, you know, not out of any kind of purpose of like I'm trying to show you something, but, you know, people would watch and they would see, you know, this guy's been in the league for a while, you know, let's see what he does. And I was always really cognizant of like, people are watching what I'm doing, so I want to make sure that I'm giving the right example of what I think a football player should be and how you want to conduct yourself. And then I think as I got older, I definitely became more comfortable and more aware even that, you know, I am a veteran, I am a leader on this football team. I start, you know, projecting my voice and my opinions a little bit louder. And I think I could became more comfortable with doing that as I, you know, got more established. But it was all just really about work, you know, and I think that can go into a lot of different areas of your life. It's just the effort and the work that you put into what you're doing and making it, you know, the most important task that you're doing in that moment.
Well, I tell you, you should go into being a football analyst, Joe. They're giving those guys like $15 million a year. Now, I don't know if you needed to be a Dallas Cowboy quarterback in order to get that deal, but you, I always thought you had a great broadcasting future in your future, if that's indeed what you wanted. If you'd ever like to co-host a radio show, you're welcome in any point in time with us. It's always good to talk to you. You know, when we talked to you last year, you mentioned that retirement really wasn't on your horizon, and then obviously you went through a rough year physically. It was my summation, though, Joe, that COVID-19 and just the odd timeline and the circumstances that we're all facing factored into your decision. Was I right or wrong?
No, that actually wasn't. It was just, you know, the kind of the timing, I guess, but it wasn't at all as far as like an, you know, made me think more about it. It really was just about my body. And, you know, this last year, you know, obviously had the, you know, leg and the finger and stuff that I missed games for. But it was much more just, you know, my neck, back, mm-hmm. you know, things that I was just kind of dealing with over the years, just getting really progressively worse and worse. And then kind of came to a head basically at the end of the season and throughout the playoffs, and then really at a head kind of the Super Bowl. And it was just, so I knew after that I was going to have to do some, you know, talking with doctors and kind of figure out what's going on. And then after talking with all them, you know, I don't want to get into everything, but, you know, realize how serious it was. And, you know, that I'll have to, you know, probably really contemplate this. And so it was kind of a, all that more than any of the stuff that's going on right now.
How many defensive opponents whose ass you kicked over the course of your career have called to send congratulations and or why didn't you retire before this?
You know, I had a lot of people reach out. You know, I didn't have it was really kind of overwhelming. I got to the point where when it first broke, I was you know, trying my best to, like, you know, respond to everybody's calls and texts. And then it got to be you know, everything was kind of flooding, and I just put my phone down and I opened up a bottle of bourbon and I just sat out there on the lawn and kind of enjoyed being outside and watching the kids run around and just kind of was out in the sun. We had a nice sunny day down here in San Diego, so I just kind of hung out there. And then I went actually through my phone yesterday and started kind of responding to a lot of people that have reached out, and you know, I have some time to kind of go through everything. And it was, like I said, it was really overwhelming, kind of just to hear everybody's stories and talk with a lot of different people.
So I'm going to try to sneak in a double question along those lines. Of all the guys you went up against, all your assignments over the years, does someone stand out as the toughest guy to block? And then when you sort of look back at your career, which I imagine you've done a lot over the last couple of days, is there one moment that stands out?
Yeah, toughest guy to block. I mean, for me, throughout my career, there's this. And DeMarcus Ware was always a challenge going up against him in a game situation. I always never felt like I came out of the game with any kind of positive thoughts about my play. He was just a really hard player to play against, prepare for. So unique in everything that he did with, like, power and speed and the length and the technique that he used. I mean, he was just unbelievable. And then, I'll always remember going against Michael Strahan just because, you know, he was a guy that I watched from my youth, and then getting a chance my rookie year going against him and taught me a ton because I got my, my butt kicked in that game. And then, taught me a ton about how to prepare and not get psyched out for an opponent. And, it really helped me a ton going forward in my career. But then I think the guys that were just the hardest were, the two guys that I played, in the middle of my career and the end of my career. The Niners just going against every day. The Smith brothers, Alden and Justin, during those Harbaugh years, it was just unbelievable getting to practice against them. I mean, they made me an immensely better football player just because you had to be on it all the time or you're going to get exposed in practice. And then Nick last year, just in that one training camp I had with him and just realized how special he was and how talented of a football player he's going to be.
Joe Staley, here on 95.7 The Game, and in our last moment with you here for now, Joe, I said that the great player can be seen at the end of his career when he makes one more play, and your last play is throwing one more block for your quarterback by letting the Niners know your retirement plans before the draft. It allowed them the room to trade for Trent Williams. What do you think of that move and the player that will be protecting Jimmy Garoppolo in the same way that you did?
Yeah, I couldn't be more ecstatic to have Trent with the Niners. I've long really respected his game. He's an absolutely tremendous left tackle. And it was really important to me to, it's kind of when I was going through the process, I kind of set a date of obviously before the draft. I was in contact with the Niners during this whole process and kind of letting them know where I was at. And then I wanted to have the decision done and final before the draft so they could, really prepare for whatever they wanted to do going forward. And then for them to be able to land a guy of Trent's caliber, is just, makes me, really excited because, it's the best decision for my family. And then also I'm not really, screwing over the Niners. They're going to be just fine, and I think he's going to fit really well in what they do. Obviously, very familiar with Kyle and their offense, having to play with him in Washington, and then he'll be a great fit in that room as well.
I got to tell you, Joe, you've been a pleasure to cover. You've been a pleasure to talk to. You've been a pleasure to watch play. One of the best this team's ever had, one of the best Niners I've ever had the pleasure of covering. Thank you so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate it today. Best of luck with the future and everything going forward. And we hope to talk to you again sometime.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not going to be a stranger at all. And I really appreciate, our conversations that we've had throughout the year. It's been really fun. I mean, I look back on all the time with the Niners with really great memories. And it was a lot of because of the people I got to meet and people I got to talk to. And it's just a childhood dream come true, man. And I'll miss it for sure. So thanks again for having me on and let me talk to you guys a little bit today, and wish you guys nothing but the best.
Hey, and thanks to the 49ers for doing right by us and getting us Joe Staley on the way out. We do appreciate that. It was good talking to him throughout the years. And again, I hope that's not even close to being our last conversation. Guys, there is no doubt a huge void is created with Staley's absence, and just in terms of locker room leader. off the top of your head, who do you think is a primary candidate to step into the leadership void left by Staley's retirement?
I think it can only be Garoppolo. I mean, he's now been there long enough, and he's got to own the huddle even more than he did before. And I don't know that there's anybody else suited to that on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, I think the defensive side, you've got Sherman. That's a no-brainer. But on the offensive side of the ball, the leader of the team is either a very good player who's been there a long time or the quarterback. And Garoppolo's now been there for the better part of 4 years. That's enough time. Oh, and by the way, not to interrupt, the A's announced about an hour ago that they are going to pay everybody through the end of May.
They must have been listening to us.
Thank you.
I think he read Rosenthal, too.
I appreciate that they were listening to us and that they did the right thing. That's the right thing to do. I mean, Ray's right. Garoppolo has to own the huddle. Garoppolo has to be a leader. I assume, and certainly based on the way his teammates seem to respond to him, that he was that to a large extent already. And so if we're looking for other candidates to step up alongside Garoppolo as offensive leaders, two and a half guys jump immediately to my mind. And first and most obvious is George Kittle, because you don't have to be bombastic to be a leader, but he's certainly a gregarious guy. And he's also as tough and working as hard and doing as much of the dirty work as anyone. So I think he has both the standing and the personality to take some of that on. And I would also say, you know, we asked Joe what his sort of leadership style was, right? And he basically just said it was leading by example, hard work, putting it on the field, and doing the stuff at practice required to be ready for the field. And I think, you know, Mike McGlinchey's a young guy, but in his third year, if he's playing well, I don't see why he can't take some of that on as well. And even, you know, to some extent, Trent Williams can come in and work his butt off and be a leader in that respect as well.
Let me give you a dark horse, and he's got to prove himself, but he's been in the system long enough to know everybody. Jerick McKinnon, if he's really going to be coming out of the backfield with the ball this year, he needs to be a leader. He needs to know this playbook like the back of his hand, for sure. Maybe a possibility there. Good stuff all around. Ray Ratto, what would be the name of your diss track and who would be the recipient of it?
I cannot conceive of myself doing a diss track, but I would I would certainly do a medley of hits about Arnold Rothstein and why he couldn't be here now to fix more World Series.
So it's more like a complimentary track than it is a diss track.
Yeah, I mean, basically all you've done here is point out to anybody who didn't know already is that I'm disgustingly old and could be dead within an hour.
No,
I feel good about that.
No. You can't.
Just the fact that
at what point did you think that the words diss track and my name should be in the same sentence?
Well, just the fact that you went on to put Arnold Rothstein and medley in the same sentence suggests that maybe diss track was asking too much.
Oh, it wasn't asking too much. It was doomed on arrival.
I thought it was a great question. I thought it was a great answer. We need to embrace how truly relatable you are to the younger generation, Ray. I mean, kids want to learn from the best.
Yeah, all they want to do is wait for me to drop dead in the street and then steal my shoes.
Youth are flocking to learn at the knee of Ray Ratto. There's no doubt about that.
Text line says that Aaron Gordon's musical drop was better than anyone from in the NBA in the last 10 years. Look, I would say it was.
That is the definition.
It's a low bar. It's a low bar.
Come on now.
Look, I think Dame Lillard is the only guy in the league where I ever thought, all right, if he weren't allowed to ever play basketball again, he might be able to do this for a living. To this day, I think it's Dame is it. Just about it.
I don't think I'm even willing to go that far with Dame.
No, and that's being about as friendly about it as humanly possible. That's comparing him. That's comparing him to other athletes, not really other rappers.
I love Dame, but I honestly think that 30-second clip that we just heard from Aaron Gordon was better than anything I've ever heard from Dame.
Give it to me again.
I don't know about better, but I would say about as good. Like, this to me is Dame Lillard level rapping.
drop it on us one more time. Here it is. Hot fire emojis, kids.
Knew one day I'd be good and you'd come for me. Didn't know it would make me this hungry. Looking at your judgment and everyone's wondering. Ride the heat, the windy city, did you see the damn coat? Saw you in the hallway, you say young and put on a show. Didn't know that's the cold, but you're about to get rolled. Even Adam Silver told me I deserve the gold. Didn't get the trophy, but I got something to hold. These n***a. Forgive me, bro, I won't sell my soul. Big chillin', paint me as a villain. I jumped over the biggest dude in the building. God willing, the best and I still am. Your judgment gives me no fulfillment.
Wait, did we delete a D's nuts?
Yes.
We weren't in charge of the bleeping. Others were.
Who?
Wherever we found this, it was a clean version.
A show more scared, less assured than ours.
Yes.
That is my favorite part of that particular verse for sure. He's funny. It's funny. And I think, like, it's more tongue-in-cheek than most of what Damian Lillard is doing.
100%.
That almost makes it more appealing to me in some ways, because that's the thing about, like, again, Damian Lillard's not a bad rapper for, like, a dude. But he's not a great rapper. And I'm going to be old man hip hop. Like, the standard for just like the level of requisite rapping ability to be a rap star has dropped so far that I think people are confused sometimes.
Don't wait for me. I got nothing to add to this.
Like, it used to take a level of skill. All the rappers you heard on the radio when I was in high school, when you were in college, Damon, like Nas, Tupac, Biggie, yeah, there were pop rap songs on then as well. But like the skill per rapper quotient was much higher, I feel.
Like, even the bad rappers had an element of uniqueness to them that made it work for you. Like Mace.
Sure. Yeah.
Mace has one album. It's pretty legit. Now, it depends on who's producing the album and whatnot. Aaron Gordon gets one cutesy diss track, knowing that he's not really trying to start smoke with anybody.
Yeah. No, I support this.
Yeah, it works. Someone's like Victor Oladipo. I don't know if Victor Oladipo can rap, but he can carry a note. He can really sing. He really can. He's got a nice, smooth voice. There you go. That was some good stuff all around. Good stuff all around.
My favorite text we've received today, by the way, is, "The youth doesn't want your grandpa's shoes." I don't know what that means, which I think means I am a grandpa, but great text.
I think they're trying to take a shot at Ray's shoe game, and Ray's got cooler kicks than most people would ever imagine. They're certainly more pastel than most people would imagine, I'll say that. And on that note, we do want to remind you that coming up on The Butcher Shop, Vernon Davis joins the boys at 7 o'clock. Stick around for that. Thanks so much to Ramona Shelburne and Mina Kimes for joining us today. To Joe Staley, one more tip of the cap. We thank him. We thank everyone for their contributions, their phone calls, and their diss tracks. For Ray Ratto and Matt Kolsky, for Lucas and Joe Spadoni getting it done back in the studio today. Thank you very much, Joe. Appreciate everyone tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow. And please do remember, sports don't build character, they reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.